Spider-Man wants to get with Batman's girlfriend, while Spider-Man's sister, Wednesday Adams, is making out with Frodo. And Frodo's mom is Ellen Ripley. Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
Dear Lord, thank you for this Thanksgiving holiday, and for all the material possessions that we have and enjoy, and for letting us white people kill all the Indians and steal their tribal lands and stuff ourselves like pigs, even though children in Asia are being napalmed. Okay.
Jesus, enough, all right!
Paul, roll.
Thank you.
Can I have the gravy?
What is up, everybody? This
howdy,
is episode 10 of Recotopia. It is also Sin Week, as we are talking now. We're going to be doing two episodes this week, although a lot of you out there who just listen to the feed, it's going to just be normal for you guys. You're going to hear this one next week, and then you'll hear the one after that the following week. So. Welcome to everyone in the chat who has come to watch us live.
What's up?
Talk about this. Today's big recommend came from Jeremy. It is The Ice Storm from 1997, Ang Lee. I'm Chris Atkinson.
And I am Jeremy Scott.
Cool. And
I guess.
Yeah. Let's do some of our small recommends. You want to start some small recommends?
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty living space.
It's so small and light.
It's small, it's tiny, it's petite, it's wee.
All right, and I'll jump right in there with the movie I was watching last night.
All right.
Hadn't seen in maybe 5 or 6 years, Ender's Game.
Ooh.
This is Asa Butterfield and Haley Steinfeld, Harrison Ford, Ben Kingsley, A lot of great acting in this, and I don't think this movie is an A+.
No.
I do think this movie is really enjoyable, and better than the trailers gave it or made it seem.
It is certainly that.
I believe it helps a great deal to know as little as possible, like to have not read the book. If I had read the book before I saw this movie, it might have played a little different for me. But because I went in blind, especially the last third of this movie, I really, really dug. Video game stuff where he plays is a little strange for me. And some of the flashbacks to life at home, I'm not sure need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not a long movie. It gets right to the point. I think Asa Butterfield is great in everything. It's really, really interesting premise. A kind of a twist on the alien invasion trope. I think you like this movie. Is that correct?
I do. And I read the book back in college really loved the book. And I even read the book after that, The Speaker for the Dead.
I didn't even know there was a sequel.
Yeah, there's a series of Ender books. One's called Xenocide, and another one, I think there's another one after that too. I don't remember, but there's like 4 or 5 books in that series. Ender's Game is one of those, you know, having the book in mind while watching the movie gets to its conclusion, like it seems way too fast. Because it seems a little bit more protracted in the book. I guess that's, you know, because it's a book, I guess. I don't know. It seems like the payoff is a lot more, there's a lot more to it, but the movie, I still think the movie is pretty good. I think if you're a hardcore fan of this book, that's probably why you weren't like a super fan of this. And maybe, I don't know. It's not perfect, but man, I did like it a lot.
Yeah, in fairness, it's like a 62 on Rotten Tomatoes, so, you know, it didn't get great reviews, but it is a 6.6 on IMDb, which is a notoriously harsher than Rotten Tomatoes for some reason.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it. That's my first small recommend.
Nice. This is probably going to be my first ever non-movie one. I have been spending inordinate amount of time playing this Elden Ring game. It's honestly dangerous to say you're making this open world video game thing. I hear that, and I hear that it's good. I want to play it immediately. And so I lucked out. I got a PS5. I bought this game with it, and I've been doing nothing but that on that system since. I have two other games that came with the bundle that I bought. Have not really touched those. this game, here's the thing. I played Dark Souls back, on the Switch when it came out on the Switch. Dark Souls is one of those games that I think you have to have. This is going to sound really like asshole of me to say, you have to have a kind of character that can deal with this kind of fucking game. You have to have a lot of patience. I think you have to have so much patience that there's probably something wrong with you to have this much patience to with a game. Like every boss battle in this thing, these guys have, to use a poker term, they have some of the most tilting abilities ever. You get in there and you're battling some boss, and it's like, okay, I need to make sure I do this and this and this, and I got to do it really quick, and I got to get out of the way, and I've got to come back in for the attack, and then blah, 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 blah. And then suddenly they have some other attack that shows up out of nowhere, and you're like, whoa, wait a minute. We had a deal here, Elden Ring. This boss only has this amount of abilities. Now all of a sudden he has this ability as well. But I'll tell you what. When you come up with a strategy to beat these bosses and you finally vanquish them, there's such a satisfaction to it.
Oh, I bet.
And plus, just being able to explore these huge worlds and just wander around and find things, find secret things and everything is a lot of fun. But my God, man, these battles will just absolutely drain you sometimes. And you're just like, it's just one of those things where one thing that a lot of these big characters have in there, they have some sort of stomp attack where either they stomp on you if they're a big huge creature, they'll stomp on you, or they just can stomp the ground and the ground comes up from here and it can stop you and stun you, and when you get stunned, forget it, they're gonna come in and just annihilate you in two swipes when that happens. And every time you get caught up in one of those things, it's like, come on, why does everybody have a stomp? Why is the stomp? Anyway, I've been having a lot of fun with this game. It's been taking up hours of my time, and I feel guilty when I play like 6 hours in a row and I'm like sitting there going, I could be doing more productive things with my life, but this is a lot of fun right now.
What's that space game? Come on, commenters, help me out. There's a space game. You might like it. I played it when it first released 3, 4, 5 years ago. And it's like basically the universe. You can go to as many planets as you wish to, and they all have
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and they've apparently added and patched that game over and over since then. No Man's Sky. Thank you,
No
Patrick.
Man's Sky, that's right.
Patrick coming in with the save there. You might check that game out. Now, I should go back to it because it was pretty buggy when I played it, but they've also added a bunch of creatures. And also, with Elden Ring, I read, If you like opt in, players can like jump into your game and like ambush you and try and take your experience points and shit. That's wild.
I think so. Yeah. I have not. I tend to single player this stuff, and I'm very old school that way. I may be open for multiplayer type stuff later, but if there's a situation where someone can take your entire like experience points or whatever. It takes so much time to build up your character in this. I have on days just mindlessly went through some of the same things over and over again so that I could build character points. Oh, I'm not going to let some dickwad come in and steal it over because they, you know, happen to have some good sword of some sort. So,
Jeffrey says they really turned No Man's Sky around into a great game. So
that's interesting. Like, yeah, because people like me only heard about when it first launched and where it was like, oh, well, this was not what everybody was expecting. I remember it being one of the most hyped games ever. And then when it came out, everybody was like, oh, well, this is not all that good, is it? And but I have heard some whisperings that it was, but I thought it was the type of whisperings that from the cult though, where it was like it's actually better than you think or whatever.
Yeah, you're wrong.
I guess this is something that's become a mainstream view maybe on No Man's Sky.
I think it's got a little bit bigger than a cult following, and certainly not the positive things you hear about it today are not like cultist views. I think it's genuinely gotten better and better. But if I put that game in today, I bet it's got, I don't know how many days worth of updates that I have to wait before I'm able to play that shit.
No doubt.
The
yeah.
The bad thing about video games today is that they keep tinkering. All right. My second small recommend for this week is a very, very big recommend in a small package. Right around the time I was watching Yellow Jackets, a TV show that I loved. A friend of mine, friend of the show, producer of the show, Aaron, tweeted out something about Station 11 on HBO Max. And this stars Mackenzie Davis. And he tweeted so positively that I said, I will check out an episode of that show. And it took me about an episode of that show to get hooked. And it is hard to... Okay, this is about a pandemic, a flu that wipes out 99% of the population of Earth. And 15, 20 years later, I think, we're following a lot of the same characters we started following when the pandemic hit, especially Mackenzie Davis's character. She's a young actress on the stage working with a famous Broadway actor who collapses on stage the night the pandemic hits. She ends up with this unexpected caregiver. And in the future, after the pandemic, she's part of an acting troupe that goes around like Lake Michigan every year doing Shakespeare for settlements and towns along the way. And this show is so freaking layered. It is prestige level of plotting. And it continues to revisit moments you've seen before with, but now you have new knowledge or you gain a different perspective. Like there's a scene where the little girl's obsessed with this graphic novel, and there's only like three copies of this graphic novel. And it's how she escapes from this hell of a post-pandemic life by just reading this obsessively. And she goes out one day and her caregiver is gone and her graphic novel is on the ground and she calls out his name. And that's the last she sees of him. But like three or four episodes later, it goes back to show you the night before that and his story and why the comic ends up on the ground and why he's not around anymore. And then he ends up in a place where there's an unexpected reveal at the end that ties back to the very first episode, and it's just the whole freaking show is this complicated, you know, Goodwill Hunting style algorithm of like piecing together this emotional journey. It really, really pays off. Everybody's incredible. My absolute favorite scene is where she and her rival have to align for one moment. And they're the only two people who are obsessed with this old graphic novel, but they're pretending to be actors in a troupe, even though they hate each other. Mm-hmm. And the guy they're trying to fool says, "We'll do a scene if you're actors." And they start doing a scene from this graphic novel that they have both memorized as children. The only complaint I have, literally the only complaint I have, is I think it needed one more episode. The final episode wraps up everything, in my opinion, too quickly. Mm-hmm. And yes, oh my God, Lori Petty is in this, says Catherine. Mm-hmm. She is. She's awesome. Mm-hmm. David Cross is in this for an episode or two. The cast is outstanding. I loved it. It's a book. Apparently the book is great. But this is a series I'm going to go back to just because I feel like The Sixth Sense, even though the show gives me a lot of that effect anyway, I'm going to watch it again and see things I didn't see the first time and go, oh my God, that's good. Oh, that's why the, oh my God. It's just so well plotted. It's one of the best plotted things I think I've ever seen. So,
wow. That's
two thumbs up.
I think I remember you saying that you were in the middle of watching this series. You said, I really like this, but, and I can't remember what it was. It was like three episodes in, but you were had some reservations about it halfway through.
I remember that vaguely, but I don't remember what those were. I think it was a little bit before everything started paying off, and it felt a little fragmented before that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to watch this at some point when I'm not hammering away at Elden Ring.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. My next small recommend is a movie that may, I know a lot of you guys out there lament that you can't find some of the stuff we're recommending on streaming and everything, and I'm afraid this is going to be another one here. Because this one, according to the Real Good app, is not available on any services. Not my services, but any services. And I had to buy an overpriced Blu-ray to watch this. but Heavenly Creatures recently watched this, and mainly because the discussion about the aforementioned Yellow Jackets and Melanie Lynskey has sort of come back into the discussion, and she's finally entered the mainstream discussion. Like, you saw her in stuff after Heavenly Creatures, but it was always like really small roles. Like, she shows up in Sweet Home Alabama as the mom who brings the baby to a bar.
That's right.
And she showed up in a lot of just small roles. She shows up as Matt Damon's wife in The Informant, and she finally hit the big time this past year. And this also stars Kate Winslet. This movie has the opening credits has an introducing both Kate Winslet and introducing for Melanie Lynskey. What an introducing kind of credit sequence. Seriously. It has. But this is a story set in New Zealand in the 50s. It's about these two girls who kill this whoever, I can't remember. Melanie Lynskey plays someone named Paula, I think. They kill her mom. And you're trying to figure out, okay, how did they get to this point? Most of the point of this movie is showing their friendship and how it evolves over time. And it seems very innocuous, but it's very strong and strangely strong. Melanie Lynskey is introduced to the Kate Winslet character. Kate Winslet is someone who moves around a lot. She has tuberculosis, and her parents are constantly making her move to warm climates for the good of her health, but they're also basically leaving her there. They're not like really parenting her at all. They quickly find a friendship when they're paired together to draw pictures of each other. They're supposed to be drawing portraits of each other. And it is a fun, I love this scene because it's like a whole bunch of girls in this class posing for pictures, and everybody's drawing pictures of them and everything. And it gets around to Kate Winslet and Melanie Lynskey, and Kate Winslet's drawing this picture of it's like some complete fantasy sequence, like back in the old days. It doesn't even have Melanie Lynskey in it. And the teacher comes by and is like, where is she? And goes, oh, and Kate Winslet's like, oh, well, I haven't gotten around to drawing her yet, or whatever. And Melanie Lynskey turns around and turns to and looks at the picture that she's been drawing. And she goes, I think it's fantastic. And So they start getting, they start this big friendship, and they're always together. They're always hanging out. They start making like entire fantasy worlds together. Like, you know, they have this whole other different world. They start calling each other by the character names and everything. And it's very innocuous, but, things start to happen where Kate Winslet's parents are going to want to move her again. And of course, there's a point where the Kate Winslet's parents think that she's a lesbian and they don't want her to, you know, they don't want her to be a lesbian. So they're trying to keep them apart. There's a whole bunch of other different complications with parents being parents. And it's at one point where there's going to be a point where they're going to have to break them up. And so they plot this murder and everything. And it's, even though you know it's going to happen, it's somehow very suspenseful how it comes about. Cause you're always sitting there thinking, Peter Jackson does it in this way. And I may have buried the lead. Peter Jackson did this movie. Peter Jackson does it in this way where you're like, oh, is this the part? Is this the part where it happens? Is this the part? You know, it keeps doing that with you throughout. I found the conclusion of this more emotionally powerful than I thought it would be. I think if I had seen this movie back in 1994, way back when, I may have looked at this movie a different way. I think now I look at this as, even though these are our main characters and these are the people we're supposed to care for, this murder is like, and just, it's absolutely stunning. And it's like, you're wondering where it comes from and everything. It's scary. It's downright scary how this comes about. Because, you know, and you're like, how can someone who on the surface appears normal, gets good grades in school and all of that, how do they get to the point where they want to murder somebody? And, that's a question that the movie is not sitting there wanting to answer. It just tells you this is what happens. But Peter Jackson shoots this in a great, I mean, this is, you can see some of his like future Lord of the Rings type stuff in here. And the fantasy sequences are really well done. Of course, Kate Winslet and Melanie Lynskey are fantastic in this. I know that Melanie Lynskey, had to endure the whole thing where Kate Winslet got all the attention after this movie. And you know, Kate Winslet went on to have, you know, still has, but went on to have a 7 Oscar nominated career, including winning one after this. Well, Melanie Lynskey is finally getting some accolades, mm-hmm. you know, 27 years later. This movie is really, really good. I highly recommend it.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. I saw this movie when it was first on home video or somewhere in the first couple of years. I think mm-hmm. it was at least on the awards radar.
Yeah, I think it got nominated for original screenplay or I can't even know if it was adapted or original, but it did get nominated for an Oscar or two.
I don't remember anything about it, so I definitely need to buy an expensive Blu-ray and watch it again.
Yeah, I may have to give that to you at some point, let you borrow it, because it's silly. Like when something's out of print, everybody who has a copy of that knows it, and they're like, "We're gonna gouge you. We're gonna." Yep, exactly. For this, but it, especially if you're just now being introduced to Melanie Lynskey now after Yellow Jackets, you want to take a look at where it all began.
Yeah, awesome. All right, now it is time for this week's big recommend.
All right, everybody, it's time to talk about HelloFresh.
HelloFresh. Listen, the older I get, the more valuable my time becomes, right? Even a half an hour here, 20 minutes there, I can do so much with that. And making a meal for your whole family from scratch or from your own ingredients, it's a time-consuming process. And so one of the best things about HelloFresh is how much time it saves you. There are a lot of other benefits because this stuff is delicious. You can get farm-fresh seasonal produce, easy-to-make recipes delivered right to your door. Every week, these ingredients travel from the farm to your doorstep in under a week. So that's fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the recipes they're running right now, chicken and pepper cavatappi Milano.
Ooh.
Crispy Frank's Red Hot Spiced Chicken.
Oh, my.
Beef Flautus Supreme.
Oh, my God.
Pork and veggie bimmy bop. Listen, they send you all the ingredients in the right portions. Mm. You don't even have to do the portions.
Yep.
And they have a easy-to-follow recipe. You make this thing, you save time, you're eating healthy, you're eating restaurant-quality meals for way less. Now, if you go to HelloFresh.com/Recotopia16 and enter the code Recotopia16, you can get up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. So take it from me. I've been a HelloFresh customer for quite a while. It saved me a lot of time. It saved me money. I'm eating better than I ever have before, and I'm loving it.
Yeah.
HelloFresh.com/Recotopia16. Use the code Recotopia16. Get up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts.
I'm fine. I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
And this week's big recommend is the Ice Storm, or as I like to call it, everyone is horny and unhappy.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Now, let me break down the plot of this movie for you. Spider-Man wants to get with Batman's girlfriend, while Spider-Man's sister, Wednesday Adams, is making out with Frodo. And Frodo's mom is Ellen Ripley. okay, I'll stop there.
No, I wish you could keep going. That would be amazing.
I wish I could. That's one of my favorite things about watching this movie is almost every scene has a new recognizable face. Oh, that person's in this. Oh, that person's in this.
Mm-hmm.
David Krumholtz is in this.
Yeah.
Oh, Harry Stierney is in this.
Yeah.
And it just goes on and on. This is set in the 70s. This is about a suburb community near the big city. I'm not sure it ever specifies. They name the town as New Canaan, but I don't know if that's a real place or not.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, Kevin Kline and the husbands go to the city for work and make money, and the wives stay home and visit each other, and the kids wander wherever, and it's a simpler time. And there is obviously the titular ice storm that is the slow burn of this movie, and it's always there on the horizon. It's talked about on the news. It's they're always hinting at it, and then Ang Lee starts showing you the ice building up and building up. And my very favorite thing about this movie is, especially on your first viewing, you have no idea what the tragedy is going to be, but you know there's a tragedy coming.
There's an unnerving sense all the way through this movie, for sure, where you're just like, oh my God. And especially, we'll get to it, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Once it hits, oh my God. Once it hits. So I say, jokingly, everybody's horny, but almost everybody in this movie is horny.
Yeah, yeah.
Both the brothers, Elijah Wood and his brother, are both, you know, fooling around with Christina Ricci.
The kid from Jumanji.
It is the kid from Jumanji.
Yeah.
I could have thrown that into my role earlier. Frodo's little brother is the kid from Jumanji. Dang it.
Yep.
And, you know, Kevin Kline is cheating on Joan Allen, because that's what you do,
with
Sigourney Weaver, which is their next door neighbor. You can walk back and forth from
there. And a little Dave reunion there.
Yeah, a little Dave reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different characters, though.
Yeah.
And then ultimately we get to... the infamous key party, which I don't know if you're going to do a key party that you would surprise your guests with that.
Right.
I would think you would let people know in advance, unless you just don't think anyone will come.
There's also the chance, I don't know, and it may have to go back on a review of this movie, but maybe there's a chance that they are so... like up their own ass that they don't even realize that it's a key party when they're going, like they've been told, but they
I see. That's entirely possible.
I don't think that is explicitly said. I'm just saying it could be read that way.
No, I agree. I think this movie is just littered with very interesting, but real seeming people. The Tobey Maguire story probably gets a little more airtime than I would give it.
Yeah.
But I also think he kind of anchors that shot at the train station at the end.
Mm-hmm.
if he hasn't had his own completely separated experience, then him looking at his family like that doesn't kind of, it wouldn't play as well, I don't think.
Yeah, and right? This is all, yeah, for sure. And this is also, he's playing off a big Fantastic Four allegory, I guess. I don't know if I'm using that word correctly, but one of those, he's been reading that, and he's talked about how, you know, the Fantastic Four, they're good away from each other or whatever. It's some sort of, discussion about how they're good away from each other and they need to be together as a family, but if they're together as a family, they can hurt each other more.
Yes.
And, yes. And so that's sort of where this is leading throughout this thing. He's reading it on the train too. And, I agree. He does have to be in this sort of disconnect, or else it doesn't play the same way. If he's with the family during that whole thing, there's no telling what could have happened during all of that. So,
oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, everything might have played different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just a few notes that I wanted to mention. When Elijah Wood gives his essay in class,
mm-hmm.
about how when you smell, you're actually inhaling molecules of the thing, mm-hmm. that gave off the smell.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I'm like, that's kind of an interesting way to look at it. And then he's like, so next time you go to the bathroom, just think about what molecules you're breathing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And the teacher's face goes from like nodding to, oh no.
This was not a nice essay.
It perfectly fits because they refer to him a few times in the movie as like weird Mikey or whatever, but you don't really see a ton of evidence of him being weird, but that's a pretty good clue right there, mm-hmm. that essay in class. And it also made me laugh.
Yeah.
And then I love when Kevin Kline's trying to give Tobey Maguire the sex talk in the car, even though Toby has already said, do you know I'm 16, right?
Yeah.
It's like, well, on the subject of self-abuse, I don't think it's wise to do it in the shower because yeah. it wastes water and electricity.
Yes. A lot of these, by the way, one of the comments, Apathy Nihilist says, the Fantastic Four will lose their powers if they stay apart. Yes, one of the examples that they, were one of the parts of the story that Maguire is trying to say. A lot of these people are playing much younger than they are in real life in this movie. So it's weird to like, Tobey Maguire is like 23 or 24 in this movie and he's playing 16.
Yeah.
Christina Ricci is, I believe, 16 or 17 in this movie, but she's playing 14.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird hearing their ages out loud in this movie. Cause you're like, you're a little bit older than that, but this is one of those movies where it doesn't have like a driving story in any way,
right.
Really, it's a lot of like different episodes or whatever. Like there's a thread, it's a continuous thread. It's not like how Licorice Pizza was earlier this year where early this past year where it's like he's working to start this business, and then in the next scene, oh, he's not starting that business anymore, you know. And it's a lot of stuff. Like Christina Ricci is kind of making out with Elijah Wood. And she doesn't really know what you want to call it. She just kind of, I think she just kind of likes to hang out and make out or whatever. And then, but she finds out that his little brother is worships her, and she's obviously got something. She feels something about that in some way. I don't know what it is, what you want to call it. But she's, you know, she also like sort of like, kind of hang, I don't know, does some stuff with the little brother too, and it's a weird thing where I think movies a lot of times try to make you think, oh well, they're the ones that are together, so they'll be together and that's the way it is and everything, but this one is like, hey, they're really young, they don't know what they really want at this age, you know, one minute you're making out with this guy and the next one you're going to be making out with his brother. So,
well, and I think it's probably meant to suggest, I could just be reading into this, that she is on some level picking up on her own father's sexual promiscuity and mm-hmm. her own parents' issues, and that is confusing her sexuality at 14.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of things come into your brain.
Yeah.
But I do think that's supposed to be some sort of reflection on, because now Toby's off at boarding school. He's not affected by that mm-hmm. marriage collapsing, but she is. And I think one of the ways kids react to marital trauma is sometimes drugs, sometimes sex, sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, violence.
Yeah.
But anyway, nobody's happy. Nobody in this movie is happy.
No.
And I don't know if that's a commentary or if that's just to suggest this neighborhood is mm-hmm. entirely unhappy. Mm-hmm. But you look throughout, is the little brother the only guy that gets to be happy, maybe?
Like, yeah.
Toby doesn't get the girl he wants. Nobody's marriage is in really great shape at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And
what a fascinating character Sigourney Weaver plays in this, by the way. Like, she's having an affair with Kevin Kline, but you can say it's the most emotionally detached affair that anyone can have. When he starts trying to talk about his life and everything, she's like, I already have a husband. And by the way, her husband, oh my God, that poor bastard. Oh, what is one of the all time, this poor bastards of all time. But especially, and I'm going off on a bunch of tangents, but especially when he does have the chance to sleep with Joan Allen later on in the movie. It's in the car and it's like 2 seconds. He's already, and he's like, oh my God, I'm sorry. That was terrible.
That was awful.
And but Sigourney Weaver obviously is like, just, I mean, it's, I don't even, I mean, I don't know what you want to call her in this. I don't know if there's a clinical definition. It's not, I don't think she's a sociopath, but she's, I don't know, she's close to something like that this, because she doesn't care one way or she doesn't care one way or the other about what's going on here. And there's a point where says something, he's talking again, and she doesn't like that. And she goes, it's like, I'm going to go get some birth control, and goes, oh, okay. And then she just leaves the house.
Yeah. And then confusingly, he wanders around the house in his underwear. This is not his house.
Mm-hmm.
This is an affair you're having. And he just wanders around in his underwear, checking out all the rooms.
Yeah.
As though there couldn't be somebody who comes home, which is exactly what happens.
Yeah.
I was confused by why he was expecting her to come back.
Mm-hmm.
It took him way too long to realize that she was gone.
But
she's very detached from everything. Her husband, her, you know, affair, even her kids. She's mm-hmm. kind of going through the motions when she's parenting.
And that's why I think even at the end, and I don't know how spoilery are we getting here? Cause I don't know how many people in the chat have actually gotten to see this movie, but I think we know something tragic is going to happen. It happens to her family.
Yes.
And she's the only one at the end who's not even around when that news is sprung on everybody. I think the movie is basically saying she's going to shrug that off.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. I think the younger brother and the father both show clear love for that kid in that mm-hmm. scene. Oh, I just ruined it. Oh, well, I don't really care because we told you ahead of time and,
yeah,
I'm sorry. I do.
Yeah,
care.
No,
I
that's
bad.
Fine. I don't think we're going to be that adherent to spoilers on these type of things. I mean, a lot of times we try to avoid it so that people will go and watch it, but it's hard not to talk about the death that happens in this movie.
I agree. And I don't think it should keep you from watching it, even knowing what happens.
Yeah.
But when the ice storm is at its peak, let's start there.
Mm-hmm.
There are several people out and about. Elijah Wood, wants to go hang out with Christina Ricci and calls her, and she's like, well, maybe. And so he mm-hmm. goes out to some field to play in the ice.
Yeah.
And then she goes out and goes over to that house to hang with little bro. Well, then there are people sporadically leaving the key party not with their spouse,
mm-hmm.
and driving in these reckless conditions. And so it puts about a half a dozen people's lives in the balance.
Mm-hmm.
And when it finally cuts back to him sliding down the street and giggling, I think that's when you start to realize what's about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the scene is played,
sparing
score, and then the way it's shot after he's dead, because it's an ice storm, the body just slides down.
It
punches my gut.
It's so, like, especially too, because he's seeing it in a way that you try to put yourself in this same situation. If you're sitting on an innocuous guardrail on the side of the road and you see these, he knows that he's in danger, but he doesn't know enough that to jump off of the guardrail.
He says something like, oh no.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he doesn't move.
Yeah. And there's all these live wires going towards it. And then I don't even know if the movie has shown you that he's sitting on the guardrail yet. Maybe they have, but once that hits it, you're like, oh, is he sitting on that? Is he touching that right now? And he sure as fuck is. This is when they come back to him. Remember, they take a long way away from him too, because he's on that diving board in that swimming pool with no water. And he's like slipping on it as he's walking on it, and he's bouncing up and down on it. And you're like, oh, this can't end well.
Yeah.
And so they go away from him for like 10 or 15 minutes.
Yep.
And you're like, are they just going to find him in the swimming pool later on? And then you see him, oh, he's okay. And that's the big rug pull out from under you type thing that it does.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, anyway, the ice storm, from 1997, is that what you said?
97, Ang Lee.
Ang Lee, who is still one of our best directors. Mm-hmm. This is one of the early films American audiences got from him. And if you haven't got a chance to see it yet, hopefully some of this discussion will push you in that direction when you are able to come across it. And go ahead.
One more thing, since we've already spoiled it. Kevin Kline breaking down at the end when he sees Tobey Maguire in the backseat. It's a perfect ending.
It's how I feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like,
well, and he's been holding it in this whole point because he sees someone he slightly knows that he called weird earlier in the movie, that he wasn't too sure he should be hanging out with his daughter.
Yep.
Sees that kid dead, brings that kid to his father.
Yeah.
Who's just like, again, he's just a sad sack, poor bastard guy. And what a terrible night this guy has had. It's like three different things all hit him at once. I think he realized his wife was cheating on him. I think he had that awful Joan Allen experience, and now he's lost his kid. So yeah, this movie is devastating. I had forgotten, I hadn't seen it in forever. So I'm glad that you recommended this.
Awesome. All right. Well, do you have a super secret double feature recommend?
Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
I do. I thought of a couple of movies during this point. The first one ended up being the one that I'm going to go with.
Okay.
One of the movies that I thought of during this was Magnolia. Magnolia has that kind of like, there's not a real story driving it. There's a big storm in it that factors in. This is a frog storm, not an ice storm. But
imagine if that had been the name of the movie.
The frog storm. A lot of these just sort of seemingly disconnected stories, people going in and out of each other's lives, that came to mind, but I could not shake Wonder Boys. I could not shake it. And it's not because Wonder Boys has a lot. I mean, it doesn't have, I think the tone is a little bit different in Wonder Boys. It's a little bit more comedic than Ice Storm. Yeah. Ice Storm's a little bit more black comedy kind of thing. Yeah. But you can't shake that Tobey Maguire and Katie Holmes both in the same movie.
Yeah.
Drugs are a big factor in this. Yeah. Infidelity, Michael Douglas with Frances McDormand in this movie. Yeah. Just the overall adult feel and tone of this movie, I think, would pair well with the Ice Storm. And so I couldn't shake Wonder Boys in this at all.
That's one of my very favorite movies and will 100% one day be a recommend on this very podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good call. I like that. There is a lot of connections there. Even Robert Downey Jr.'s character is sort of sexually lost, just mm-hmm. like Christina Ricci's character in The Ice Storm.
Yeah.
That's a good pull.
Yeah.
Wonder Boys is on HBO Max, says, I don't know how to pronounce your name. Aites? Aites? 417?
Yeah.
Thanks for that information. All right. I think mm-hmm. it is now time to announce next episode's big recommend?
Question mark? Yeah. So this is Sin Week, and every Sin Week we run out of theater to watch one of the brand new movies that is coming out. And because it's in the spring, usually we don't have like the best of the best or anything usually that come up. One year, the first year was the best year, I think. We had Us as a feature. We had Bloodshot in another one. That was bad. That was bad. And then we did Godzilla versus Kong virtually. That wasn't very good. But you know what? There is a theme. Aiza Gonzalez is in three of these movies. Ambulance is going to be the next Wreckatopia. I hope and pray that we're able to actually recommend this movie. But it's Michael Bay and I'm going to have a lot of fun in the crowd watching this movie. I know no matter what happens, it'll definitely be better than Bloodshot. And first off, Jake Gyllenhaal's that's going to be fun.
Yeah. He's always fun.
Ambulance is going to be in our next episode. And then it's weird. We've had this weird like run on this. It's just the how everything started and everything. We had this weird run where like, okay, we're going to do the Batman. And then we did, the best of, and now we went back to normal for one episode. Now we're going back to some way off. We're going way off on this one to do Ambulance. So,
well, we did do two episodes. We did do Lone Star.
That's right. That's right. That's correct.
But yeah, hopefully after Ambulance, we can get back to a good string. We know it's good before we recommend it.
Yeah.
All right, let's do some questions.
Questions. All right.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I'm listening.
I want the truth. All right. Has your favorite movie changed over the years? If so, why? For example, in my 20s, my favorite movie was Clerks, but as I've gotten older, my number one spot is now The Princess Bride. I've always loved both movies, but I find Bride more fun to watch. Chris?
Anytime someone asks me, like, what is your favorite movie, I'm going to knee-jerk say Back to the Future, just because it's something that's always been around my life, it feels like, and I've seen it so many times, but I think over the years, if you were to ask me and I were to truly assess movie experiences that I'm going to end up putting above Back to the Future these days, movies that I would maybe prefer to watch these days, City of God is going to be one of those movies. Might be a future episode, City of God. City of God is a movie that I didn't know anything about going into. It was an unusual circumstance by which I watched it. At Hollywood 27, we didn't get very many press screeners at all, because that was usually Green Hills that got those. For some reason, we got City of God as a press screener. And so built that movie, watched it one morning before a shift, and just blown away by that movie. blown away. Was rooting for it to like sweep a bunch of Oscars. Of course, it was going up against like Lord of the Rings and stuff. So, but that movie is amazing.
Awesome. I think when I was really little, part of this is just age, and part of it is, you know, as you grow up, you change. Like, you don't, you're not the same person you were when you first said, my favorite movie is Disney's Robin Hood, which was probably me at age seven. And then I graduated to Muppets Take Manhattan for several years, and then it was Back to the Future for several years. And in college, it was The Cable Guy. I probably watched that every day for a month straight. And then finally, The Matrix is what I currently call my favorite movie of all time. But most of you know, I have seen The Martian. God, we're creeping up on 60 or 65 times now. And it might overtake one day. I have no idea what my favorite movie will be in 10 years. And I allow myself to change and my opinion and answer to that question to change.
Well,
I thought it was a good question.
Yeah.
moving on. What is your favorite roll credits moment or moments?
Oh, you know what? I completely did not see this question in the email.
Oh, excellent.
So go ahead and answer this question. I'll try to come up with some.
At least you didn't pull a Jeremy and like misinterpret the question.
Yeah.
All right. So I actually wrote the Matrix, you know, like it's said a few times, but when Morpheus says it, I think is a great roll credits moment. Welcome to Jurassic Park. That's a great roll credits moment.
Yes.
And then I put, and again, this is not the first time in the movie, I don't think, but forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown is a great roll credits moment, even though I think they say Chinatown 52 times in that movie before that.
Oh, yeah.
so roll credits moments are usually annoying, but sometimes they can be fun.
I don't know if this is a great one. It's going to make me laugh if I ever see this movie again, but it's probably a bad moment. And if I gave I need to give this question probably some more due time, but actually probably let's just say it is a bad moment in the movie White Squall. there's a point where Jeff Bridges is looking out into the water and the kids are all like on the boat or whatever, and they see the water coming towards them and he goes, "White Squall." And that's when the White Squall comes in. But I can't think of anything right off the top of my head. We can say Back to the Future has a good roll credits moment.
Somebody in the comments has suggested that.
Someone did that. Someone, you know, it's like when Doc's like, next Saturday night, it's at the end of that great, like, run through everything that's going to happen and everything. We're sending you back to the future, you know, so.
Catherine says the Lord of the Rings roll credit moments felt forced.
It did.
They announced the Fellowship of the Ring.
For sure.
All right, moving on. Are there any instances of some of your favorite actors giving performances that you actually ended up disliking?
I really like Ryan Reynolds a lot. But in the Amityville Horror remake, where he is sort of, and he's fine. It's just that it just doesn't, Ryan Reynolds has a brand, and this was even before like a lot of people got on the Ryan Reynolds bandwagon with Deadpool and everything. Van Wilder was like his big thing. Two Guys in a Pizza Place. Those type of things had come out, but the Amityville Horror remake, he's super intense in that movie. It's just, it's off-putting when you see it because he's such a jovial actor. You know, I'm sure totally fine, honestly, if you really wanted to come, I mean, that's what he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be a deranged, you know, father with a house talking to him and tell him to kill his family and everything. But I didn't like it. So, so that's that. Also, Peter Falk, in the run of Columbo episodes that I've watched, I've watched everything in the 70s, and I'm now getting into the 90s when I have a chance to get into the Columbo stuff. But there are two episodes in the 70s run where he plays like the whole episode. It feels like he's just drunk or something, and they're trying to play it up for some laughs or whatever, but it just comes off just being weird. Because Peter Falk as Columbo is always like the super professional guy who is a little bit of a, he's a little bit annoying, not all the way annoying. He never gets to that point. And that's what he does in a couple of episodes. So I would also include that.
I just thought of one that has two actors that I can name in a single movie, and that's Alex Cross. Which is a movie I only watched because of Aaron. But I don't hold a grudge or anything. But listen, I'm not talking about Madea Tyler Perry, which I have only seen one movie anyway. But Tyler Perry in Star Trek, Tyler Perry in Gone Girl, I think he's a great actor. He's fun.
Yeah.
He's good.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But in this movie, he's playing the young version of Morgan Freeman's detective from Along Came a Spider. And it's just too serious.
Oh, yeah.
And then on the other end of the same movie of Matthew Fox, who's just fine and great in Party of Five and Lost. But here he's playing a Hannibal Lecter-esque crazy killer with tattoos all over his body, who's like buff as shit. And it just didn't work. Man.
Yeah.
That whole movie should be a comedy and it would be perfect. But everybody's playing it straight and it's not. I also wrote down, let's see, that one just came to my head. But I also wrote down Tommy Lee Jones in Blown Away.
Yeah. Oh, that awful Irish accent and everything. Oh, my God.
He's such a good actor.
But that was that year that he was in everything. That Blown Away year, 94, he was in everything that year.
He sure was. Let's see who we got in the chat over here being recommended.
One's Alan Tudyk in 42, and they're talking mainly the character and not the performance. And I agree. Although I will say, I don't know how it really was back in the Jackie Robinson day, if he said the N-word that many times, but my God, man, that is like a world record amount of N-word usage in one scene is Alan Tudyk in 42.
Yeah,
And I guess they're trying as best as they can. You're never going to be able to know what Jackie Robinson actually felt, but I think they're trying the best that they can to make you feel somewhat like that.
Yeah, they made me feel something, but again, can't compare.
All
right, the chat is breaking down into some ludicrous things. We'll move on. Take a property that hasn't already had a film version made and tell us however many details you want regarding casting, director, production that you would do. It can be a book, a comic, a song, a TV show, short story, video game, poem, whatever you want. I think I might have stole one of Chris's answers. I apologize.
I don't know if you did or not. It's a long story, but I'm not as prepared as I usually am with these questions. But, I don't know if you stole anything or not. I just off the top of my head, would like to know the story of the making of Back to the Future. At least see it. I already know a lot about it. I just like to see it dramatized. I'd like to see the whole thing with Eric Stoltz.
Interesting.
I'd like to see the, you know, Michael J. Fox having to do this and Family Ties at the same time. Because he had to do Family Ties, then he had to take the summer break or something to do Back to the Future, then he had to come back to do. I can't remember if he had to do both at the same time because I think they wrote him out a little bit in Family Ties so they could do this, or it was some sort of break, but whatever the case may be is his schedule at the time had to have been insane. I wanted to know, I want to explore that. I also want to explore the fact that they wanted to call this movie Spaceman from Pluto, which has a really great backstory to it because I believe it was Sid Sheinberg, who was a producer at the time, wanted to call it Spaceman from Pluto. And Steven Spielberg, wrote a note to him saying, ha, ha, what a funny joke. You wanted to call it Spaceman from Pluto. And apparently he never brought it up again. Sid Sheinberg never brought it up again because he didn't want to go through the awkwardness of saying I wasn't joking. That's sort of the genius of Spielberg as a producer and as a heavy hitter in Hollywood.
It's amazing.
To get that. But I want to see all of that. I think the story of how that movie was made is very interesting. In fact, almost there's a lot of great movies I'd love to see an adaptation. There's that they've either just come out with or are coming out with something about how the making of The Godfather with
who's in Top Gun 2, Miles Teller.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I like that. I would like to see a multiverse Back to the Future where, like, a second DeLorean shows up and Eric Stoltz hops out and Michael J. Fox is like, what the hell? And then a third one pulls up. It's Christian Slater. And he's like, what's up, guys? And they have to team up.
Yeah. He's like, I'm just right, here. I'm just here gleaming the cube, guys.
I went gleaming the cube. Mm-hmm. I went with Red Dead Redemption. Even though that game itself could be called a sort of a watered down generic kind of Western. Mm-hmm. But if you put the Coen brothers on it and music by Bear McCreary and you cast Timothy Oliphant as lead,
yeah,
I think you got something there.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yes, I acknowledge the people in the comments, Catherine and Patrick, who are naming books that I've written.
Yeah, I was going to say When the Corn is Waist High, written by some unknown author. Starring Ethan Hawke and directed by David Venture. Yeah, boy, that'd be something right there.
That would be something.
That would be a good double feature, by the way, Ethan Hawke. It would be, you know, that movie with the Paul Schrader movie, the priest movie that he made.
First Reformed.
Yeah, First Reformed, and you have The Corn's Waist High. Have that as a double feature. That would be
different priests.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. I think we got time for one or two more.
All right.
Like Jerry and Seinfeld, who made out during Schindler's List, what movie have you tuned out in order to make out?
Or more.
And if you never made out during a movie, what movie was either boring enough or sexy enough to make you want to tune it out and make out with someone?
The one I remember is Mad Love, a movie that came out in 1995. Matthew Lillard and Drew Barrymore. They're in Seattle. That's all I remember about the movie.
Is it Chris O'Donnell in that, or is that a different one?
Chris O'Donnell, I think, might be in that. Yes, actually. Yeah, right. I think he is in that. Because Chris O'Donnell and Drew Barrymore just happened to be in Batman Forever together the same year, I think. It was like one of those weird things. But yeah, that's all I remember about that movie. I think the movie is terrible. I think if I recall, that movie is terrible. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I didn't miss much.
You know who else is in that movie? Friend of today's episode, Joan Allen.
Oh, really? Joan Allen. Wow.
I put The English Patient, which is true, and then The Green Mile, only because for a very brief period.
Green Mile.
Well, listen, for a very brief
during the I tried to take it back scene.
I was dating a girl who didn't really have anything to do, so she came to the theater. This is at Hollywood, even. And I led her into Green Mile to watch a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But like you do when your girlfriend is in the theater and you're on a projection shift, you sneak in there every now and then and say, hey, what's going on? And you make out a little bit and then you leave. I had at that point not seen the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure in hindsight, what's up? I'm pretty sure I annoyed her. Mm-hmm. We were not together for much longer.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's probably going to do it for today's episode.
All right.
Thanks to all the people in the live chat and to all of you listeners out there. If you would like to become a part of the live broadcast in the chat, you can go over to our patreon.com/cinemasins, join our Sin Club, and whatever level that is, when you get there, we'll get you access to be part of this. And we really enjoy you guys being a part of it. It does sort of feel more like a group discussion, and I think it keeps things lively.
Yeah, for sure. And whenever we can't remember things because we're idiots, it's great that they can come up and say, hey, this is the answer, guys. The answer is love and other drugs, if you didn't know. So... good to have you guys again. That's it for this episode. Next week is Ambulance. For some of you, it'll be in a few days. Hopefully we have fun with that. But, see you guys. See ya. Bye. part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
Now I got now I have reading to do.
Mm-hmm.
Shit. So every other boy band that came before them is looking at them like going, how did you do that? Mm-hmm. We only produced one, you know, standout each boy band prior
right.
to One yeah. Direction. I don't know how the hell BTS is going to do it when they break up, because there's like 13 of those guys.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know why when I apply for things like passports, why I always have the wrong information when I go in to a place. I always have something that I'm missing when I go in to, when it happened, when I had to get the gold star on my driver's license and all that.
Oh, I haven't even done that yet.
I did that actually before the real, deadline for it.
Oh, wow.
And I read the stuff on the online, and it was like, have this and have this. And it didn't say you must have this or anything like that. It just says bring, it's always vague. It's always like bring one or two, proof of residency and all that. And so like this passport thing said, we need a copy of your birth certificate, either the real birth certificate or the copy is what I read. Now, I could go back to the site today and it says you need to have your real copy of it, your real version. But I read it a couple of times and it says you need to have either your birth certificate or a copy. So I made a copy of it because I'm like, why would you send your real birth certificate in the mail and have a chance of it getting lost?
Yep.
And so I copied it. And I also copied my driver's license front and back on one page. And I brought in the application, had everything filled out, and I come in. And first thing they say is, do you have the photos that you were that you need for this? And I said, I thought that's what this was for. I thought I come in and you take my picture and that's how this works. And they're like... And it could have been worse, I suppose. It could have been a long line at the post office just constantly every time. And I just went through the big long line and then found out that I got fucked again.
Give me what you need and I'll take heed to lead you in the right direction for affection. Do you remember that?
God, I should remember that.
Yeah. It's from some 90s hip-hop song and I don't remember what it was. I feel like it was Bell Biv DeVoe.
Type that in Google. We need to figure this out.
I don't know why that certain lyrics stay in my head. Let's see. Give me what you need. I probably even got them wrong. And I'll take heed to lead you in the right direction for... I got them wrong because Google doesn't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Lyrics for Do Anything by Natural Selection. Me what you need, not give me. And I'll take heed and lead you in the right direction for affection. See what I'm saying? Oh, I got to get the rest of this now. I got to click through.
What is this? Who's this called?
Huh?
What? Who? The song and the band? Who's this?
It's Natural Selection. It's okay. The album. I guess that's the band as well. And the song is Do Anything.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this what I remember? My God. Right direction for affection. See what I'm saying? I ain't playing. Stop delaying, girl, and make me your natural selection.
Nice. Oh, God. So they were a band that lived their name. They made an album. They put it in the song lyrics. It's like Bad Company.